Like notes through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to episode number 100 of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Dorian Wood, Charmaine Lee, Thor Harris, Circuit Dayu, Leia, and so many more. But for episode 100... Had to do something special. So my guest this week is the one, the only, Michaela Tobin. Woo! Michaela has become one of my friends and collaborators and just, yeah. So Michaela moved here with her partner, Basek, back in February, March of this year. So we were able to actually record this in my studio. And what could be more special than recording in person? The 100th episode of this show. Thank you so much for listening. 100 episodes. I can't believe we've done 100 of these. It's crazy. But thanks everybody for listening, for all the kind words, for all the feedback, for just, yeah, I don't know. Y'all rule. And if you want to keep supporting the show so we can do 100 more, you know, subscribe, leave a rating, review, all those things help a lot. Please, please do that. Like, it's a short thing. Doesn't have to be a whole lot. And even more, if you really want to see it keep going, you can join the Patreon for as little as $3 a month. Patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis. You get longer episodes and you get them a little bit early and you get a bunch of other stuff too. So everybody who's done that, I thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And just again, thanks everybody for, listening to the show and just, I can't believe I made it to 100. Gosh, blows my mind. Michaela. Yeah. Michaela rules. I don't know. We've been working a lot together over this summer, on the new White Boy Scream record. It still kind of blows my mind. It's been one of the best experiences I've had in a while. And I can't wait for y'all to hear it. She can't wait for y'all to hear it. We talked a lot about that in the episode, and a whole lot more. I don't know. This was just like so much fun. The show ends up being like an hour getting to hang out with like a friend, and then y'all get to listen to me and someone. I mean, in this case, like Michaela really is my friend, but a lot of people, I meet them for the first time, but it still feels like hanging out with a friend for an hour and talking about cool stuff. What's better than that? Cause you know, in the year 2025, when we are surrounded by collapse, being together is vitally important. So anyway, with that uplifting news, I hope you enjoy episode number 100, Songs of Our Lives. My guest today is a vocalist, a composer, a performer, a DJ, an all-around undeniable badass. It's my friend, Michaela Tobin. I can call you a DJ now after seeing.
I'm like, wow, DJ.
Yeah, after seeing that the wake thing, you know.
Well, you know what? I know how to make some noise on the deck. So,
yeah. Works for me. So you've had quite a year.
I have. My God. But here we are.
Yeah, you're in Tulsa now. We're recording this like in person, as anybody listening, because that never happens. But.
From Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Live from the Jewel Garden. So, I guess we're going to talk about... So, you're working on a new album.
Yes, I am.
I know a little bit about it.
No, you might know a little bit about it.
I think we're probably like the two people in the world most intimately familiar with
yes.
it.
Yes.
So, give a little bit of background.
Yeah. So, this album is going to be my first, I guess, full-length album since Bakunawa, which... God, came out in 2020, which is five years ago now, which is crazy. So I'm excited about it. It's different. It's, I think, a different direction than kind of some of the previous releases. I would say it's more song based. It's I started writing it about a year ago, last summer, when I was at a fellowship in Italy, and I'm basically done writing it. It's right. It's basically done.
Yeah.
After just a year of loss, I would say loss and transformation and grief, and that's what the record is about. I think the songs and the kind of room that it's in reflects that really beautifully, and with your amazing mixing and production choices, I feel like we've made something really beautiful. I started this record, you know, in Italy, and then started working on it in LA with my producer there, Cordy Lopez. And then when I moved here, I was like, I really want to continue working on this in person with someone. Yeah. And I was really, you know, the gods brought us together. Yeah, and absolutely. I was like, Brad, I feel like Brad is the right person to kind of round out this record and really shoot it into the atmosphere. So yeah, I'm excited to finish it up soon.
Yeah.
And hopefully have it out by, you know, next year, and I'll be touring and, you know, sharing it with all of you.
I can't wait for people to hear it. Oh my God.
Yay, me too.
I'm curious if, so obviously grief is a very central theme to the record.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between kind of the grief you felt when you were writing these songs versus kind of what you're experiencing now as we're producing and you're refining them and it's coming toward its end, not its end, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's such a mirror of like what grief, what I'm learning grief is. You know, I started writing the record when I found out my father's health was declining. We didn't know he was terminal yet. And so I think there was a pre-grief in it. This like, and you can hear that in some of the lyrics, some of the poetry that I've written. And then as, you know, his illness progressed and he passed in late December, you know, the grief became very real, but it's also like something that I could never anticipate. Even though I thought I was ready, I really, you know, you just have no idea until you're going through it. Yeah. And then losing my dear friend in March so soon after, you know, what's on the other side of grief? More grief.
Right.
And, you know, that's something like Jay and I say with our piece Wake, which, you know, we could have a whole other podcast about just that piece. But hopefully that will also be in the world again in the next like year or two. But so, yeah, I feel like and I finished the album, you know, and I'm still kind of finishing the last touches now on kind of the other side of these two massive losses in my life. And just the transformation that has come about from these. Also, like, moving to, like, being in a new place, meeting all these new people. Like, my life and who I am, I feel like, yeah, is a different person than who I was a year ago when I started this record. So it's a journey. I'm really excited to, you know, in the last couple of months of my father's life, like, I was very lucky and privileged that I got to spend, like, pretty much every day with him.
Oh, that's amazing.
And we would have conversations like sitting in the garden. And so I'm including, and I recorded some of those conversations and I haven't really been able to listen to them. I've kind of been putting it off. Like even since we started, I was like, well, I have these recordings, I'm not ready to listen to them yet. But when I am, I want to include them in the record as like these beautiful interludes and kind of this narration almost. And so in the last like 2 weeks, I've finally been ready to. Wow. And it's been really beautiful, like, to listen to his voice. I feel like it puts me back in touch with him in this way that, like, grief sometimes feels like a wall, or death feels like this wall that's put up. And you're like, I don't have access to that person anymore. But especially for me as a vocalist, hearing a loved one's voice, even more than seeing pictures or video, like, just hearing his voice, I'm like, oh, we're still right there.
Yeah.
And he always had that moment. I think this goes back to, you know, field recording. I mean, your workshop, you and Warren's workshop over the weekend also inspired me. And I was like, oh, when I go to Kansas City this weekend, upcoming weekend to play Kansas City Noise Fest, you know, Kansas City, Missouri is where my dad was born and raised. And I was like, oh, I need to take field recordings there. Like, I feel like I'm going to find the rest of the album there, which makes total sense.
It's so it's really, yeah, no, it feels like such a, it's such a beautiful sort of full circle exclamation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's really, I guess I've been thinking about grief a lot mm-hmm. recently and thinking about how, you know, there are, like you were talking about, the moments where sometimes it feels like they are so far away, but then it's like when you have those moments where you feel like really sad or really, mm-hmm. and it like over, it's, and I think a lot of us, when those moments that you're like, oh, I got to distract myself, but it's like, no, like when you let yourself feel that, it's like, that's when you're so close to them again.
Exactly. It's, I had this thought over the weekend that, you know, sometimes I wake up and just feel like, ugh, I don't want to hold, like the grief is like this ball that I hold to my chest. Like mm-hmm. I wake up every day and have to kind of re-remember that I'm holding this. And sometimes I want to just throw it across the yard right. and be like, I don't want to play today. Like, yeah. I don't want this. But I'm curious about making grief like my best friend too.
Yeah.
Like grief is like your friend. Grief is like this thing that you, it does feel sacred in so many mm-hmm. ways, which is beautiful. And so, yeah, I think that goes to like just what a, how it's so multifaceted and it transforms you in all these mm-hmm. ways. And it's also nonlinear. It's very psychedelic.
Yeah,
I think that's a big thing. The biggest thing. I'm like, wow, death, grief is so psychedelic.
That's such a good description of it. It is.
Yeah.
Man, mm-hmm. I love the idea of grief as psychedelic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, do you think, so the Kansas City thing is super
yeah.
interesting. And I, like, are there just beyond that, like just thinking about, are there particular like sounds or even, I don't know, instruments or textures that you, that feel connected to your father, like, or to specific memories of him at all?
That's such a good question. Definitely like creeks and rivers, like running mm-hmm. water. He was a fly fisher. That was his like passion, his hobby, like. His favorite place to be was on a fishing river by himself casting. So I've been to the river a couple times here in Oklahoma. And this last time I was there, I was wading in the river by myself and this big fish kind of swam by me. And I just like looked at the fish and I was just like, oh, I was like, hi, Dad. You know,
yeah.
I just like felt him and the sound of the water really reminds me of him too. I don't know. I just feel him. And I think I wrote this like in my journal. I think I shared it too on my stories. But like, I think when you pass away, you become part of the things you love the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, anytime I'm on a fishing river, the sound of that, like I hear him, I see him. So I think that sound for sure. So I might go back to the river and like get some recordings, but honestly in Kansas City, I really just want to be like the sounds to emerge. I feel mm-hmm. like walking around, I'm going to walk by, you know, we're going to go to like my grandfather's, like his father's house that mm-hmm. he lived in and just like walk by it and, you know, just
yeah.
see what emerges there. I feel like field recording is so magical in that way.
Yeah.
Like sound walks, like, yeah, it's just that letting the music emerge from the pedestrian, like
mm-hmm.
as a byproduct of like, you know, what you're doing. And what I'm doing there is like, I just want to go and walk around and enjoy this place and feel my dad's presence
yeah.
wherever it may be there. So
yeah,
I'm excited. I mean, you'll hear all the sounds that I recorded.
I can't wait. No, I'm really excited. Well, it's been like so much fun working
yeah.
on this record. Fun and like heavy and
yeah.
all, I mean, like, I mean, I don't know if grief is fun, but like grief is like all the emotions.
Oh, absolutely.
And so this record has felt, at least just the parts that I've been part of, it's
yeah.
like, it's felt a little bit all of that too. So
absolutely.
People need to be ready.
Yeah. Get ready, people.
Well, awesome. Well, I don't have a great segue here, but we're going to dive into...
Let's dive into the songs.
All these songs. And you take us for a ride here on this
I do.
Song. It's pretty great. So, as always, I'm going to begin with, what is the first song that you remember?
Yeah, the first song I remember, honestly, like, in my crib, is the main theme from Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev, which is, I think, a pretty famous, like, children's
mm-hmm.
kind of classical music.
Yeah, I think
song.
So. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure, I think my parents probably had it on tape. Actually, I know they had it on tape because I remember the cassette tape. And just that dun 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 It like it's just such a it fills me with such a feeling of kind of excitement and fear and wonder.
Yeah.
And I just love it. And when I taught preschool about 10 years ago at this time in Seattle, I taught music classes and was an assistant teacher at a preschool there. I then played it for the kids, like on a rainy, dark day. Like we turned off all the lights and like I got all the kids in the center of the room, like on a bunch of pillows and stuff. And like
I played it and we played
like this game of like, whenever the wolf comes out, you have to run and hide and scream. And it was so fun.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. So it's, yeah, it's a good one.
That's awesome. Yeah,
definite early music memory.
It's so whimsical.
It's so whimsical.
And I love it. But I think, like you mentioned, like there is this undercurrent of sort of like danger, like,
yeah,
which I think is just heightens all of that. So was there, like, growing up, was there like a lot of music in the house where you lived?
I think so. My parents both, you know, love music. My dad loved classical music, especially both my parents do, but especially my dad. So definitely a mixture of like classical music, jazz, you know, kind of 70s folk rock, like Carly Simon. My mom loved, you know, we had Joni Mitchell playing, like Astrid Gilberto, like, you know, just such a mixture of things. So I'm lucky that, you know, my parents like music and would always be playing records or tapes and then CDs.
Right.
You know, I'm still trying to get my mom to get like do the streaming. Right. And like Apple Music or Tidal, like we could do that and then you could play whatever you wanted, but she still has her MP3 player, which is cool too, because I mean streaming is like inherently evil, but
right. I know. It's but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if my parents use streaming. I have no idea what they do. I know my dad still listens to CDs. Because he gave me all his records, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I have a bunch of records from them, but they still... My mom has the CD player still, so... I put out a CD last year.
Hey, she have a copy? Like, hey,
but I don't have a CD player.
Well, you can go to your mom's house and listen to it. Yeah,
exactly. Like, not even in my car is there a CD player. Yeah.
I think, I know my car. My car's pretty old, but...
Yeah, so you still have a CD player.
Yeah,
like, they don't put them in the cars anymore.
I know. No headphone jacks on phones, no CD players in cars. What are we doing?
Come on now.
Okay, what's a song that'll make you cry?
So the song Fly by Low from the album Double Negative is so beautiful. I just remember I was on tour when that album came out and just listening to it while driving through like the Western United States. Was so beautiful. And I had a friend that was sick at the time that ended up passing. I mean, not to go back to grief, but I mean, grief is grief. Grief is everywhere on the other side of everything. And I remember he passed while I was on that tour from his terminal illness. And I listened to that song while driving in the like this beautiful open road. And it just reminded me of him. It reminded me of, like, I imagine his spirit just like being free and flying, you know. And so that song is really inherently tied to that memory for me, and I just love it. And I mean, that whole album is like make me cry, like, so good.
I had a hard time listening to this song now, like, especially like there's just the song itself. It's like this weird, it's like minimal, but it's not sparse, it's like infinitely dense. And they pack like these whole, I don't know, like emotional weather systems into these.
I love
Like the spaces in between each of the words. Like, and then you add the gravity of like Mimi's passing.
I know.
And this song is just, it's unbelievable.
I'm really glad I got to see Lo play on that tour.
LA. Yeah.
And it was beautiful. Yeah. I love that album so much.
It's heavy in a lot of ways. Okay, on the other side of it, what's the song that'll put you in a better mood?
Without You, My Life Would Be Boring by The Knife from the album Shaking the Habitual. I love that record.
Oh,
it's so fun, but then it gets super weird in the middle of it, like unexpectedly, and then it gets fun again. It's so great. That's such a classic standard kind of like, okay, if I was going to make pop music, like, this is how I'd want to make pop music. So I should shout out to Derek Basek.
Yeah,
right. Like, I want to make an album like that
you. Come on, Derek. This song is such a jam. Oh my God.
It's such a jam. It's so fun.
And the like, I love the title because I don't know. This is going to be really corny. But like, I think about my life and I think about my partner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my life would be so much boring without her.
Yeah. And same. I feel the same.
I mean, I know, knowing Derek, I can imagine.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He brings all the spark to my life. Yeah. And I love the voice, like the quality of the her voice on this record, song, and the lyrics are so fun and weird. It's just, everything is just chef's kiss.
And it feels like there's like this childlike joy kind of at the heart of it, which just is, it's so infectious.
Yeah, and you just want to, you have to dance.
Yeah.
You have to dance to it. It's so weird.
Songs that, where you don't really have a choice, you have to get up and move.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a lot hard. I don't know. Maybe it feels like a super hard thing to do to me. And then, I mean, I see Derek and Derek can just like, what? Let me press a button. And
and like make everyone dance. Yeah. It's great.
But he's like a savant. So
we got to have him on here.
Oh,
got to do some episode with like me, you and Derek. That'd be super fun.
That would be, it would be like just 2 hours of nonstop insanity.
Yeah, I was going to say we'd go over the time limit for sure.
Hey, I'm the boss. There's no Tyler.
It's a durational podcast.
Yeah.
Six hours of chatting.
Yeah, it's a whole season.
Yeah.
Recorded in one afternoon. Okay, everyone's favorite question. What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
I love this question. I mean, Vissi d'Arte, sung by Maria Callas, the greatest opera singer of all time, in my humble opinion. But it's from, Tosca, the opera Tosca by Puccini. It's such a beautiful song. It's the perfect length, in my opinion. Like, it says so much in a nice, like, in a way where, sometimes, like, a lot of opera, like, they just say the same thing over and over, and, like, it's too long. Like, some like noise sets, too. I could argue do that, too.
Yeah, it's like the opera version. Like, this could have been an email.
I'm like, tell me what I need to hear beautifully.
Because this is like 3 minutes long?
Yeah, and but it's
the whole
perfect thing.
Oh my God.
The melody's perfect. Her voice, her performance is perfect on this. You see that there's very few videos of Maria Callas, like of her performances. So it's one of the few videos. And it's just, it's heartbreaking and soaring. And I think it's the perfect song. Perfectly sung song.
Yeah, I think it feels like it could. Like, I'd heard this before, but I don't think I'd really listened to it as closely as I have since I got your list, and I've listened to it a bunch of times, even though it's hit, like, and then once you read the lyrics and the, oh my God, especially as an artist.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, cool. This is just.
I know.
I've devoted my life to art and I've been abandoned by the gods. Okay.
It's cool. And it's cool to look at the score too. Like, I love kind of reading opera scores and just looking, like reading along while listening, because you get to see all the detail of like, wow, there's so much kind of tone painting in this, like just the chords chosen and the progression and like all of the placement of accidentals and things. I mean, I'm such a nerd. Like, I hate music theory, but I love analyzing things. Like, I hate, like, don't test me on my key signatures, but like, if you give me a weird piece of music, like, I will love to, like,
just
figure out the chord, like, the chords and, like, the kind of secret language behind what you're hearing, like, deciphering it, and like, oh, that's such an interesting trick to get, like, this simple sound requires so much kind of planning and math.
Right.
So yeah, I'm a nerd. I was like, I have to put an opera song, or who am I?
Well, and I think it's an aria. It's really interesting too, because I've had this discussion on here before about like the difference between a song and a performance, or like, so there's like this song as a song exists, but you picked this specific version of, and so it's like there are hundreds of other versions of this, but her, I don't know, her voice. I feel like this is like, it's like the human voice discovering what it was designed for.
Yeah.
It's like listening to her.
Absolutely.
And this, like, she holds these impossible moments of mm-hmm. feeling without breaking.
Yeah.
I don't.
And her silences are also really spectacular and mesmerizing. And I think that's so hard for singers, you know, yeah. Or musicians, like, to be silent and like to know, like, the music is still happening in the silences.
Right.
Is really, I think, an important lesson that, like, you know, as a teacher, what I would always tell my, like, students, like, just because you're not singing in this moment, you are still singing, though. So, like, yeah. Stay engaged. Like, don't let the energy. Ooh. And she's just the best example of being in it, being present completely.
That's really,
yeah.
That's a really powerful idea. I like that. I mean, I think about that too, even just with, even in, with music, like using silence in music,
mm-hmm.
like, it can, you know, it's hard to do because there is, I think
it's hard,
especially in the year 2025, we all have ADHD now, yeah. And we feel like we constantly have to be,
yeah.
And I mean, that's something I'm trying to get better about. It's like, no, you can just be quiet.
Oh yeah, I still can't. Also, like with songs, with like things I write, I'm like, ugh. You know, where's my patience? Like, I'm like, yeah. Oh no, I moved through this a little too quickly. Like, I rushed when I'm improvising. Like, I'm rushed that. Like, I could have breathed in that, you know? So that's something that I think free improvisation, you know, on the other end of this is important, because I think it teaches you. You teach yourself patience too.
Yeah.
Do that stuff.
Yeah. Patience is the lesson I'm trying to learn in all aspects of my life these days.
But, I feel you.
Okay, what's the song you used to love, but now? No thanks.
You know, I love the song Lunacy by Swans. What record is that from again?
It's the one with, like, the wolf.
Yeah. I mean, that whole record is just, like...
is it called Wilderness? Did I make that up? I think I made that up.
We gotta look it up. Google.
Yeah.
It's a great song, but, you know... Michael Jira really disappointed me as, like, Noise Dad a few years back, and I just haven't been able to listen in the same way, I think, because I looked up to him as a band leader, as an artist, as, like, the way he kind of, I don't know, carried himself on stage. Like, I would go see Swans every time they would tour through LA and Seattle. Like, you know, I had a signed poster of his up in my room, like... And so I was just super heartbroken when that info came out. And, like, you know, I believe victims, so I stand with victims. So I just can't listen to it anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm right there with you. There's, you know, there's certain things that I can, I mean, it's like a forever conversation of art, artists.
Of course,
and
yeah.
Everyone's line is different, and I try not to, like, judge people.
Sure. Or,
you know,
yeah,
it's like, as long as you have your, what you're not, no, I don't know what you're talking about, that didn't happen, like,
yeah,
go into it eyes wide open. And
yeah,
but I can't.
Yeah.
At the same time,
on,
like,
a spirit level, I'm just like, oh yeah, it's just like, objectively, it doesn't feel the same.
Yeah. I mean, the song that comes up here a lot is the Ignition remix by R. Kelly, which is arguably the greatest pop song ever written, but you just can't. Okay, on to more fun things.
Yeah.
What is a song that most people hate, whoever these people are, some group of people, but you don't care? You love it.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed to say this because I just, because of who my boyfriend, partner in life is, and this is, like, the exact, like, opposite electronic music of what he makes. It's, like, so corny. Good Life by Zoo, I wrote, is objectively cringe, but I just have such a great memory attached to seeing Zoo at, like, a festival when I was younger, like, in my 20s, in this, like, period where, like, I had, like, never been to festivals before, and I was, like, really, like, experiencing kind of joy for the first time, where I was, like, such a, I think, like, coming out of school, or coming out of, like, was it grad school? Yeah, like, the period between grad school and undergrad, I was just, like, so stressed about my career and just, like, how to be an amazing artist, an important artist, and make work, and what's going to happen to me, and what the heck am I doing, that I just, like, never took time off to, like, go hang out, go to a festival with friends and like fuck off for 3 days with a bunch of other people that were doing that same thing. So I went to a festival with a friend of mine took me, and it was like the first time I was like around thousands of other kind of young people that were just partying. And it was really challenging for me. I was like, I don't know. I don't understand this. Like, I should be working on music or whatever. And so I saw Zoo performed, and it was just like something about his voice. Like, I just love, like, I love falsetto.
I love it
with, like, you know, a lower set voice sings really high up there.
Yeah.
And I just love the set. I love the song. And so I listen to it. And every time I listen to the song when I'm driving, I listen to it only, it's like on my driving playlist or when I'm flying. It's like on a playlist called Fly. And so it comes on and I'm just like, oh, yeah. Joy. Like, stupid joy. Like, this, I'm having fun.
There's something about, like, because I totally get that too, where it's, I mean, I think about this, I've had this conversation with a lot of people about, you know, so we both like live in this experimental music world or whatever, and all the like emotions of it all always is like so serious. It's like, but you know what? Joy is a fucking emotion too.
Joy is an emotion.
And it's like important. Making music that is like joyful and fun. And
it's hard. It's very challenging. Yeah. I always tell people that it's harder to make something uplifting and joyful than it is to make something sad and dark.
Because it's, you know, I mean, and yes, this is like objectively corny.
It's but, so corny.
But it's, I don't know. There's also something kind of freeing about just, it's like, yeah, I like some shit that's just corny and cringe. I don't care.
Dun, 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 dun. it's so funny.
It's another one of those songs that makes you want to like get up and move. It does. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Derek doesn't want to get up and move here. Maybe he just runs out of the room.
I'll have to ask him. I played it in the car before, like on long road trips or whatever. Like, I'm like, we have to listen to my fly play. I have to play this song now. I think he just kind of goes like mute and is just like on his phone and like just, like, doesn't
pretending
acknowledge
it's not
it.
Happening. Oh man, next time he and I jam, I'm gonna be like, hey, let's put this track to your rig. See what happens.
Actually, that would be sick. I would love that.
Well, okay. The Good Life remix from Brad and Derek. Okay. Do you think of yourself or consider yourself a romantic?
My Venus is an Aquarius. For those of you that know what that means, you will understand, listeners. So romance is very non-literal for me. Like, you know, a bouquet of like red roses is not gonna do it for me.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't like, no. So romance, I don't know. Romance feels like such a cloudy, like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, what is romance? I don't know. Like, everyone's so different of, like, yeah. So I don't really know what romance means. I feel like I don't make romantic music, or I never write, like, love songs.
Yeah.
Even though recently I read through all my journals when I was home for a couple weeks this summer. I read through, my mom has, like, all my journals from, like, elementary school through, like, college. So I was, like, looking through them, and like every entry in them is like about some heartbreak of some boy that didn't like me back that I liked, and I was like, God, can you write about something else? Yeah. Like, so that's maybe so that's why now as an adult, like, you're, I'm just like, ugh. Eh, I'm like, that's so boring. Like, I don't, like, there's so much more going on in the world that needs addressing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can.
But
romance can mean a lot of things.
So
what is your pick for the most romantic song?
So my most romantic song is like Orange Moon by Erykah Badu. Like, I feel like Erykah Badu, to me, like, her music, her voice is so luscious, and just like, she is one of my favorite singers of all time. Like, listening to her growing up, I learned how to sing through listening to her. Yeah, like, I would say like her, Joni Mitchell, Maria Callas are like my three favorite singers. But that song, Orange Moon, is romantic. Like, when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, I feel in love.
Yeah.
I feel that, you know, like, I feel like she transmits that in a way that doesn't make me feel like, doesn't feel corny like other most love songs. I'm like, I don't know, you're singing about it, but I'm not feeling it. And right. So for my, I just say my Venus in Aquarius because I'm hard to penetrate.
Yeah. No. So I think that I totally like,
does it for me though.
I'm totally on the same page on that. I think the thing about this song, or, I mean, I think you could say it's about Badu in general, but like, she has this way of finding this sort of, it's like it's not romance, not like these dramatic gestures,
yeah.
But it's like this, like finding the infinite in the like intimate.
Yes, yes, and it's so intimate.
Yeah,
with the sound design, every choice, like yes. The production is just beautiful on this track. I mean, that album is one of my favorite albums of all time. Is many, many people,
right?
But yeah. I'm an orange moon. And just like the melody and just her like little vocal motifs that she does are just so iconic.
Like,
and
yeah, the way
it
she
puts
like,
you there. It's like it you're does. There.
And it's like the way she stretches the vowels and stuff, it makes it feel like her voice is actually like caressing your skin.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like she, to me, her picture of romance, because I talked about this on another song mm-hmm. of hers with somebody, but it's like.
Did someone else pick an Erykah Badu song as their most romantic?
No, somebody actually picked, it was an Erykah Badu song. It was their first song memory. I was like, holy shit.
That's cool.
But we kind of got into all, I mean, because it's Erykah Badu. Yeah. But like this song too, it's about how, because, and this is what romance to me is. It's like how when you have like two people that really like see each other
yeah.
and feel it, like the whole universe will rearrange itself.
Yes.
And like,
absolutely.
That is romance.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I like flowers, but not as a I just like flowers.
Yeah.
You know, but like, I don't know. Don't give me chocolates on Valentine's Day. Or maybe do, because chocolate's delicious too.
Chocolate's great. But yeah, it's interesting. I think, and that's funny coming from me who grew up singing opera, right? Like, because all of those chords. But I think that's all forlorn. Like, it's all like sad right. love stories. And so I think there's part of me that's just like, I don't want to like hear that in a song. Mm. I think it's, yeah. I'm like, give me a political anthem. Like,
yeah.
Let's talk about love and the revolution.
Yeah.
And there so Erykah Badu also gives me that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I know. And it's just all like sexy as hell, too.
Yeah.
Because it's
Erykah. The best.
Amazing.
Big fan.
All right. What is the song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
I went for better because I was like, I can't think of something that changed my perspective for worse because I'm just so. I just don't listen to things I don't like at all. Like, it's just like.
I don't.
That's invisible like that. I'm right. so stupid. Like I don't know most of like popular music too. Like I'm constantly learning through my friends. I'm like, tell me what's. I mean, right. I would learn more when I taught at CalArts because the students would like bring in songs they wanted to sing. I'd be like, who's this
right.
horrible? What is this horrible song? By whom?
I finally reached the stage in my life where my kid is the one teaching me.
Yeah, no, it's important. We have to stay open.
Yeah.
No, I want to know. But so I went with what changed my perspective for better, which is the track Wealth by Tok Tok. Really the entire album. I mean, those two albums that are like kind of these half improvised, half composed albums mm-hmm. where you just like got everyone in a room together, like amazing musicians on like Sony's dime and just like
right.
made like weird, beautiful sounds. And it's just his musical, he's such a good musician.
Oh,
rest in peace. He passed what in the last couple of years?
Yeah, right? it's pretty recently.
I just, that song to me, his voice. Again, the intimacy of his mm-hmm. voice, how kind of small but expansive it is at the same time.
Right.
Like, I think the way he recorded, too, like creating an incubator for himself, like a system in which to work. It's just a beautiful, beautiful song. I love it. And it changed my perspective on like songwriting and improvisation and
awesome.
Like how you can stretch things and how things can feel structured, but then like fall into these like beautifully unstructured places and then come back together. So I feel like that honestly has influenced my sound a lot. I think especially on this upcoming record, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, I can see it. I think one of the things is like, I think that kind of back to what we were talking about with like science, like I feel like this music has, it uses like space.
Yeah.
So where it's sort of, it's almost like an instrument itself, and it carries so much emotional weight just like in letting any sound sort of just be there. I don't know. It's, yeah. It's, I mean, it's some of the best music ever made,
it's,
I think.
So good. It's so good.
Yeah.
I'll never get sick of those two records. Talk Records. And yeah. His solo record, too. I mean, he only made one, right?
I think
And then
so.
He was just like, peace.
I know.
Peace like, out.
What a badass move.
I know. He was, you know, I mean, you know, you get the message, you hang up the phone, you know?
I mean, to be fair, if I made two records like these Talk records, I'd probably be like, I don't know what else I can do.
Yeah. Like, exactly.
You know, I mean, and then he did make an amazing solo record, but yeah, I have so much respect for that.
I know.
Most so of us beautiful. Hang on way too
and
long.
The lyrics are so beautiful, and it's I love it. I would say this one I almost put for what is a song that makes you cry.
Yeah.
This song also.
Oh, it's heavy. It's it's and it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So lyrics are you obviously wrote a lot of lyrics for your new record.
I have. And I was like, should I put my lyrics as the answer to this question? I was like, no.
That would be pretty. Hey, you can.
I can.
Most people put their like song that they used to love but can't stand anymore. A lot of people, some people pick their own songs.
Oh, that's good. That's hilarious. Yeah,
I'm like, I understand that feeling.
No, for sure.
But so are lyrics an important part of music for you? Like, can bad lyrics ruin a song?
It depends on the voice for me. I think the lyrics are weird for me. I think that's a good question. I think because I write from a vocal standpoint, so I choose words that open up, like that the voice can open up onto really well.
Right.
I think that comes from my training, my background in opera. Mm-hmm. And just like inherently hearing so many melodies, like, you know, and also in different languages of like, okay, how do you get the most bang for your buck out of like a word, like on the voice?
Right.
Like, what kind of words and like how to phrase melodies? So I almost, ooh, that's maybe that's controversial, but I feel like lyrics are kind of secondary to me for, okay, but how does how do they live on the melody? How do they live on the voice?
I think that's super interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes, like you said, it makes sense considering your background.
So
but
I almost write like that. I mean, I go through different, I edit a lot. Like, I'll do like a, you know, word vomit, like, this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Right. And then from that, I'll go back and pick like lines and just kind of like pare down, mm-hmm. pare down. And that's kind of what I've told students. Like, I've had some, I mean, I'm not kind of a prolific singer-songwriter, is not like my genre, but I do write a lot of lyrics. And I've written the librettos for my operas. So, you know, I don't like it when there's more lyrics than need to be there. And I think that's a big issue. I'm veering way off topic.
This is great.
I hate it when there's too many words in a line. And I'm like, you got to let the voice breathe and actually, so what's the point? Like, what's the word? What's the most important word in the line? You know, and this goes back to also theater training of like the go word, like the verb, like what is the line leading to? Lean into that, and like that gives us the direction of the vocal line, right? And so a lot of people just, you know, there's too many words, you got to cut them out, give me the meat, what's the meat of it. And I also, side note, in life hate being over explained to. I hate it when people repeat themselves, and I hate it when people use too many words to get to the point. So I think now I'm like, oh, that makes sense, because my songs are like that. Like, I will like I think that's why I don't really write a lot of like pop structure. It's not something, because I'm like two verses and a chorus and I'm done. Like, we go into a drone section. I don't know. Like, that's all I needed to say.
Right.
Why would I need to say it again? Or it's like one really great vocal line that's repeated as like a chant. And I'm like, these words are important. I need you to get this point. So I'm going to repeat it over and loop it for like 10 minutes.
You would be a great editor.
Thank you. I think, like, I would too.
I my partner she's the most brutal editor I know, and she's so good because she just
what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, and because it's, you know, when I'm writing and stuff, that like, I mean, I'm just getting it out, and then I'm trying, like you, I'm trying to then shape things and skill, but it's a lot. I love giving it to her,
yeah,
or giving it to somebody who's gonna be like, okay, yeah, this is good, you know. And the other, I mean, the other problem I have is that I have a lot of context in my head that I think is there that's not.
Sure.
And so it's like, okay, what the fuck are you talking about? But yeah, people use too many words.
People use too many words. And it's funny because the song I chose actually uses a lot of words.
This is a lot of words.
But yeah. I feel like they're good words because I'm also a nerd for in vocal music. I'm like, it, you know, I think it's pretty easy to write a love song.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I will eat my words one day on that. But I just think, and so like why I picked the song Lateralis by Tool, don't come for me, everyone. Don't come for me. I'm sorry. But the lyrics to that song and the song itself, like musically as like a music nerd, I'm like, I love that record. I love that song. It's so complicated, but like sounds so great.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lyrics really pulled me out of like my own kind of existential depressive crisis in my early 20s that, you know, I think that's right. Around the time yeah. most people have like a,
yeah,
what's my purpose?
I'm yeah.
like, I'm, you know, oh my God, I'm like an adult and like, what is this? What is my brain? What is existence? And
right.
So I don't know. This song really like came to me in a crucial moment and pulled me out of that state through the words. So I just, I
yeah,
have,
that's great.
It is what it is. Yeah. I have to be honest.
No.
Now when I listen to it, sure, it's a bit cringe. And like, you know, there's also other issues that, you know, about behind the paywall, you know, with Maynard and whatnot. But if I'm being honest, that song, the lyrics to that song are really important to me.
No judgment here. Like, Tool was never my thing, but I got plenty of things.
Yeah.
That, again, I say this all the time as the example. When I was growing up, Operation Ivy and Rancid were two of the most formative bands in my life, to the fact that my friend Sam and I did a 2-year weekly podcast about Rancid.
I love that.
Like, and I stand by the whole thing.
Yeah. I got in a big fight once with an ex about Tool. Like, I was like, this might be where we break up because you're coming at me for like loving this record. I was like, it's objectively good music. Yeah. It's well rated.
I'm just like, who fucking cares? Like, it's, you know, I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, those lyrics. And I think the lyrics are like, you know, he touches on a lot of really complicated topics,
mm-hmm.
but like the poetry is like, accessible, like the lyrics are accessible,
right.
And I think like taught like a lot of like young dumb kids like me like mind expanding concepts or like affirm them, so I think that's important.
100%.
I'm getting hot in my face. I'm like, it's an important song.
Come at me for Tool, I dare you.
It's another podcast.
What? Oh, okay, let's see, here we go.
Oh yeah, pick two of the
Yeah.
these questions.
What? Oh yeah. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
Oh, okay. Well, one of my other favorite singers is Kelsey Liu, and in terms of like I would say, I hate to say like smart pop music, but I'd say like intricate pop music
or
like layered, like detailed, deep pop music. Kelsey Liu comes to mind, and the song "Due West" is really beautiful. It reminds me of home. Lyrically, it's just so gorgeous. It's about driving to California. I love it. It's sentimental. Her voice is gorgeous on it. It's such a well-written melody. Like, she writes so well for her voice. And I think a good, like, vocal line is something, or a good melody is something that anyone can sing to. And, like, it's just, it feels good in the body to sing her melodies. And specifically this song for me. So I think I probably listen to that song every day. Like every time I get in my car, I'm like, boop.
I think this is a really good example of what you're talking about with lyrics. Like the way every line she writes, like it feels like it's shaped for her voice.
Yeah, she really knows how to write.
It's really impressive.
Yeah. And just all the, you know, her string arrangements, it's just beautiful. Yeah. I feel like I just love her music.
Like intricate pop, yeah. That's a really good description.
Intricate pop, yeah. Like, I'm like, you gotta listen to it multiple times to like hear everything going on.
Yeah.
She's so cool.
Yeah. All right, what's the song that you recently completely fell in love with Jesus.
Oh, well, I don't know how recent this record... I mean, did this record come out in 2023?
I think so.
God, is that already 2 years ago? Well, it feels recent. We are assembled in the throes of a long-awaited ecstasy by Dorian Wood and Thor Harris from the album You Are Clearly in Perversion. And the whole record's genius. But that song in particular, I just listened to on loop, and it's like... It's experimental, it's luscious, it's, you know, patient, it's beautiful. I mean, two amazing musicians. Dorian Wood's voice is, like, from the gods.
Oh, my God. I think so.
Thor Harris is, I'm a huge Thor Harris fan from, you know, from back in the day. And so just, they're lovely. Yeah,
it's...
Angels. Best collab to me. I'm like, yes!
I remember when this came out, I was just like, oh...
And then it's such a good record. Didn't get that much attention. I was like, everyone's stupid.
I fucking covered it, goddammit.
Yeah, I was like, is everyone stupid? Yes. I was so mad. I was like, where is this on the best of lists for 2023?
And it was one of those... Like,
I'm still mad about it, people. Any music critics out there. Well,
and I just had Dorian on the show. I had Thor on the show earlier this year.
Oh,
and then
nice.
Dorian is... God, I love her. And I know. And I said on the show, she... is quite possibly my favorite singer in the world.
Yeah.
Present company excluded.
Oh, thank you.
But she's...
Her voice is so unique. And again, intentional. I think someone that has so much intention in every word they sing and every feeling they emit. It's important. It's nuanced. And a beautiful, amazing songwriter and improviser, which is hard to do. Be both sides of that, I think.
Yeah. But I feel like the two of them...
They have the magic together.
It is, like, I remember when I first heard about it, I was like, that's an interesting pairing.
I know. I was like, how are they?
And then I started thinking, I was like, well, they're both amazing. So, and then the record is just blows any expectations out of the water. The whole thing is...
We'd love to see them perform that record live.
Oh, my God. One of the things that really surprised, I was looking at the credits for this. One of the instruments that Thor plays on this song is a box of blood.
Oh, cool. I love that.
It's very Thor.
I love that. I got to see Thor's studio when I was in Austin two years ago for Outsider Fest. My friend, Laura Gutierrez, who is one of the directors of the fest, or on the board, one of the curators, amazing, genius woman. I love you, Laura, if you listen to this podcast. I told her that I was like, I'm a huge Thor Harris fan. She's like, oh, I know Thor. Like, I'm going to introduce you via text, and maybe you could go give him your record. So long story short, I ended up walking to his house, like, and giving it, like, knocking on the door and handing him my Bakunawa record and being like, I'm such a huge fan of yours. Like, I was so geeky. He was like, come on in. And him and his partner, who also is, like, a collaborator, and they show me their really cool house. They have all these animals and just, like, everything, like, is like he built, and like all the instruments, and I was just like, can I come live here with you guys in Austin? Because they have this cool like treehouse guest house in the back.
Whoa.
He was like, yeah, we have people come stay here. You should come stay sometime. So
he's like this magical being from another dimension.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Whenever we recorded it, he was just like moving through his house the whole time. So it was...
I feel like Thor and Derek would have an interesting conversation.
I think there's...
Feel like interesting mirrors of each other in alternate dimensions because of like the percussion element, and like I don't know, the long hair, and like bubbly wild personalities. I'm like,
okay, no, I think you're onto something there. Thor Harris, Basic,
get together.
Let's make things happen. That's what this podcast is all about. Making crazy ideas happen.
Exactly.
Okay, what is the song that means the most to you?
So this one, I'm going to say it right. Cavalleria Rusticana, intermezzo by Mascagni, which is not a piece that I had listened to myself, but apparently my dad really loved this song. Wow. And so we played it a lot when he was sick, like in the last weeks of his life, like it's like calming and like it's really beautiful and luscious, and my mom was like, yeah, he'd always play it at home and stuff. So that song to me is really sentimental.
Yeah,
it means a lot because I associate it with my dad. So yeah, that kind of, I had to think about it for a minute and I was like, oh yeah, this feels like the right song.
I've never heard this. It's beautiful.
It's very beautiful and luscious.
It's like this entire universe of longing distilled into this little orchestral meditation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really, yeah, I can see it being very like peaceful and calming in those kind of times.
Yeah. So dad. I always kind of associate that with my dad.
All right, last question. What is your, at least in this moment in time, maybe it changes, but what is your favorite song?
So I wrote Movement 6 from the album Promises by Floating Points, Pharoah Sanders, and the London Symphony Orchestra. Again, that entire album is so beautiful. I love the concept of like this repeating motif that has these different like sonic planets orbiting it the entire time. And it's just such an interesting combination of musicians and musical worlds that make something. And specifically Movement 6 is where like the London Symphony Orchestra is kind of like these huge lush like string parts just like crash like these waves, and it feels like this beautiful climax and it makes me emotional. And I think, you know, going back to grief, since like it's kind of the overarching, my overarching experience this year, and I'm just like this is where we're at. But it's, this is a album and like this movement I listened to with my late friend Lau Mukodiente after the premiere of Opalaki, my opera in 2023. We had rented this house up on the ranch where we did the opera and had an after party. And after everyone had kind of passed out, it was just Lau and I on the balcony of the house watching like the LA Basin, like the lights sparkling from up in the mountains. And they put this record on and I was like, this is my favorite record too. And they were like, this is my favorite record. And so we just like listened to it together, looking at the sparkling lights. And it's just, such a beautiful memory tied to the music. So I love this song. I actually can't listen to it that much because it puts me in such a sentimental mood. I'm sure. And I'm like, okay, I can't like stand. You know, like I have to pick and choose when I listen to the song.
Yeah, well, and just, I mean, thinking of that context for you, and just thinking of the Pharoah Sanders and stuff.
And Pharoah Sanders just recently passed. Yeah,
this song feels like, it's to me, it's like it feels like it's like sending people off on their next journey.
On the next journey. Ooh, I just got tingles.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's
100%.
Like, it's hard to listen to.
It's hard to listen
to. In a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and I love, you know, thank God for recorded music, recorded sounds. I feel like, music can just transport you and connect you across, you know, the cosmos.
Yeah.
Not to sound cliche, but I feel like that's what it's been doing for me. And so I'm really grateful. And these questions were so fun to think about and then talk about. So, what a treat.
We made it.
We did it. We got to the end. How long was that?
That's a little over an hour. We're good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Once again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Michaela, who rules in every way possible. Just, I have endless gratitude and love for her. And go listen to her picks. Some amazing stuff on there. You can't check out her new album yet because, A, we're not done with it and it's not out. But go check out all her stuff. Like, you know, I mean, Bacchanalia is like one of, I mean, it's good Lord. All-timer, right? Support Michaela. And, hey, if you are in Tulsa listening to this, lots of cool stuff coming up involving myself and Michaela. So, I don't know. I'm still just kind of in shock that I've done 100 of these and this... All right, that's it. Please leave a rating and review. Join the Patreon. Check out the Jewel Garden. All the things that keep supporting this stuff. Hire me to produce your record because that was like the best time. It's been the best time, and I want to do that more. So, quick plug. All right, y'all. Hope everyone is doing all right. Here's to 100 more. In the meantime, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.